Welcome to the neighborhood. I'm glad you found us. The goal here at Neighborhood Twin Mom is to share regular moms' experiences in hopes that you are able to connect with them and know that you're not alone in this twin motherhood journey. Today's guest is Jessica Denny. Along with her wife, Alex, they have two children, boy-girl twins, who are 15 months. We talk about their decision to do fertility treatments to grow their family and what the sperm donor selection process was like for them. She also shares about the thing that surprised her the most about having twins. If you love this episode, I'd love it if you'd leave a review for the show so it makes it easier for other people to be able to find the podcast. Thank you so much. Enjoy the interview. Hey, I'm Amber, mom to boy-girl twins plus three other girls. My oldest was in kindergarten when baby five came along. I have a lot of kids and a lot of practice parenting them, but when I have a question, I turn to an expert, another mom. I believe the best advice comes from moms in the trenches, living it day in and day out. So sit back as I ask the real experts, moms like you, all the advice you asked for, and some you didn't. This is Neighborhood Twin Mom. Welcome to the neighborhood. Jess Denny is a mom to 15-month-old boy-girl twins. After a long journey with fertility treatments, the twins were born at 35 and a half weeks, and they had a short NICU stay. She lives in Florida with her wife, Alex. Jess recently stopped working her corporate job of event planning, which is my dream job, to be a stay-at-home mom to Riley and Tanner. So thank you for being here, Jess. Do you have anything to add?
Thank you for having me. No, I'm just really excited to chat today.
Okay, so you and Alex had only been married for a short time before you started trying to have kids. What was your deciding factor to go the fertility route versus like adoption or fostering or other options?
Yeah, so we got married in March of 2019 and basically knew that pretty soon after we wanted to try to have kids. We decided to go the fertility route basically because adoption is so expensive, and which is a whole nother thing that doesn't make any sense to me when there's so many kids in need. Like, why make this process so difficult for people? Not to say that fertility treatment is not also super expensive, but it was the cheaper option for sure. And also I've always dreamed of being pregnant and just having that experience. So I knew that was something that we definitely wanted to try as a first line.
So that was an easier decision.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. And so then Alex didn't have the same desire to carry kids as you did. Is that right?
Yeah, she definitely would have. We discussed that I would try first. I'm also 4 years older. So we figured with the first kid, let me give it a try the first go around. And then if for some reason it wasn't working for me, she was happy to do it. But she's a big fan of vodka and sushi. So being for her was not an ideal situation. So luckily it did work out with me.
Walk me through that. You guys started off, you just like made an appointment at a fertility clinic or like, all right, let's start this.
We talked to our OB and she gave us a recommendation for a fertility clinic here in Jacksonville. They were super highly recommended. So we made an appointment, went in. This was probably about 6 months after we were married. We went to our first appointment. And if you haven't gone through fertility treatments before, there's a lot of like initial appointments and stuff you have to go through to like check your hormone levels and all that. So we did that and found out that one of my hormone levels was a little bit low. I think it's the AMH, which is your egg reserve level. So we decided based on our doctor's recommendation to try IUI a couple times first. And then if we didn't have any luck with that, they recommended moving on to IVF just because of my hormone levels. So we did IUI twice. We tried to do it even sooner than that, but I had a cyst on an ovary, so that cycle had to get canceled. We tried another cycle after that, and I just wasn't producing any eggs for that. So that just didn't work out. So it was a little bit of a process to get the actual IUI cycles going, but then the third time was the charm, and it didn't work, but we were actually able to proceed with doing the procedure. So that didn't work. We tried one more time. And that
IVF, you tried IVF twice.
Well, we did the actual IUI procedure twice and that didn't work. Then we moved on to IVF and we were super lucky. We got 13 eggs and all 13 fertilized and became embryos. So we were super lucky with that. The first transfer we did, which was the fresh transfer 5 days after the egg retrieval, that one did not work. So then we moved on to the frozen transfer, and we talked about this a lot once we got to that point, because we had already been through, you know, a number of iterations with this whole journey at that point. And we're like, oh my gosh, we've spent so much money already, like so much time. I was 34 at that time, so clearly not getting any younger with this. So we decided to implant two embryos the second time we did the IVF, just hoping for a higher chance of one baby at that point. And then
the first time you just did one embryo, the first IVF.
Yeah. The first time we just did one, and we almost didn't even get to do one because I had so many eggs retrieved that they were nervous about the ovarian hyperstimulation syndrome. Oh. So they were borderline canceling it. And they said, no, we'll do one. If we do more than that, then it puts you in danger if you were to get pregnant. So yeah, the first one didn't work, but then we got super lucky with the second one.
Was there any point during this infertility journey where you're like, you know what? Never mind. This is too much.
Oh man. Yeah. So it was really hard. There was a lot of crying. And honestly, like the medication itself didn't even do that much to me, but just mentally, it was just really hard. And you start questioning yourself. It had always been this like back of my mind fear for me, totally unjustified. I had no reason to think this, but I was like, what if I just can't get pregnant? What if there's something wrong with me? What if it just doesn't happen? Like, I'm going to be devastated. This is going to be awful. But, you know, my wife is just so supportive, so amazing. And she just, you know, constantly reassured me everything was going to be okay. And if it's not, she said she was more than willing to try it with her. So, you know, in our situation, we were super lucky to have two female bodies to be able to work with if one didn't work. So yeah, it was really hard. I definitely questioned things, you know, and as you're going along, like all of our friends are starting to have kids. So you'd see these like pregnancy announcements popping up, or someone would tell you they're pregnant, and like your heart and stomach just drop. And it just, you're so happy for them. But at the same time, it's like, oh my gosh, is this ever going to happen for me? Like, it was really hard for sure. But we know also we were extremely lucky compared to some other people. Some people go through multiple IVF cycles and don't wind up with anything. And it's years and years of struggling. So we were really lucky in that sense, at least.
So that's the flip side. So like I had infertility issues, but I didn't have to do IVF. But then you struggle and you get so frustrated. But then on the flip side, once you get pregnant, I felt almost like guilty, like, oh, now we've done it. Now I feel bad for all these other people. Did you feel the same way?
100%. So yeah, it was because I personally know friends who were also struggling at that same time. So it was really, really, it was really hard because you obviously, like you said, you know, the flip side, you know, that you are happy for them, but it's still really tough for you to process that and tell yourself that like everything's still going to be okay for you. And, you know, it will eventually happen.
What was the conversation like of finding a sperm donor?
That was interesting. If this isn't something that you've experienced, going on this website for the sperm bank that we use, and I imagine they're all like this, it's basically like, I compare it to like Tinder or like match.com. You can find out anything almost about these people. It's not just like, oh, here's like a photo of them, and you know, if you like how they look, whatever. No. You can find out what sports they played, their favorite subject in school. They write personal letters to their future recipients. It's like all this information. So it's super overwhelming to try to narrow it down. And I always overanalyze everything. And I take a really long time making decisions on even stupid things like what couch should we buy, or, you know, something like that. So for me, it was really overwhelming trying to pick a sperm donor, because this is like, you know, genetically half of your future children. This is a humongous decision. clearly we weren't only basing it on their photo of what they look like, which obviously everyone wants, you know, an attractive person, but we also wanted someone with blue eyes because I have blue eyes. So we wanted, and Alex, my wife, has hazel eyes. So we all have like lightish eyes. We wanted someone who was into sports because Alex is very into sports. She was athletic growing up. I was not at all. So we were hoping that maybe they could get some of that from a donor. Obviously, medical history is super important, but most of that you don't even really have to worry about too much because you have to go through all these strict medical requirements to even be eligible to be a sperm donor. So it's nice that they give you the rundown of any disease, illness, anything that anyone, any sperm donor has had, anyone in their immediate family has had. So, and it's like everything you could think of. Did they have braces? like anything. So that's super cool. And it's made us feel a lot more comfortable just knowing that there weren't as many unknowns, even from a person that we were never going to meet, but possibly maybe down the road, but for a long time, we would not meet them.
So what was the decision of going for someone, you know, anonymous that you don't know versus like asking someone that you know?
We briefly talked about it and shut it down real quick that we did not want it to be anyone that we personally knew, just because that just can get super complicated and messy, and just wanted to avoid all of that. So we decided to get a sperm donor who was willing to give out their information once the kids turned 18. They will have that opportunity to reach out to them and make contact once they are older. And that's also something that I really struggled with. But
oh yeah, how come?
Just because it's like, you know, this person who, while genetically related to our kids, has absolutely nothing to do with their upbringing, or they don't know them at all. And it's just, I think it was hard for me because, like, knowing that Alex, my wife, I don't have to keep saying my wife, Alex, would not be genetically related to them. So I didn't want it to be hard for her if down the line someone else comes into their life, but it would be hard for me too, because it's, you know, a stranger essentially. But I also didn't, I tried to put myself in my future kid's shoes, and would I be curious about this person I'm genetically related to? Would I have this longing to maybe one day meet them, you know, see if we look alike, see what their personality is like? And I didn't want to make that decision for our children and take that away from them without them deciding what they wanted. That was important to us too, to have someone who was open to making contact down the road.
Got it. Alex is... had to adopt your twins.
That is correct. And that is something we did not even know until after I was pregnant. One of my best friends is a lawyer, and he was in town visiting, and he's like, oh, so is Alex, do you have a lawyer set up so Alex can adopt the babies? And we're kind of like, wait, what? What? In Florida, you can be on the birth certificate if you're a same-sex couple. Both mothers, both fathers can be on the birth certificate. So it was a little frustrating for me to have to go through that process. We've already paid so much money to even to create these children and hospital stays to birth them, whatever. And then now to go through the process of having to adopt them was really not fun. We had a lot of emotions about it, mostly because, you know, if you're a heterosexual couple that is married, and you have a man and a woman has a child together, it's like just assumed automatically because you're married, and that person, you know, could have very well cheated, and that man is not the father, and there's no burden of proof whatsoever for that. So that's, it's just frustrating, given that we were married, we jointly made this decision together to get pregnant, have these babies. She was in the hospital with me when I had them, in the NICU taking care of them, but it's like none of that matters. It's just, it was frustrating. So we definitely did, me more so, drag my feet on it for a while, just because it felt so dehumanizing to have to go through that. And it was just really just a frustrating situation, but we knew obviously that's not a reason to put it off. So we went forward and everything's all done. And she is officially on paper their mother now. So.
And do you think that you guys will have kids again for Alex to carry them, or is that journey over?
You know, we have definitely talked about that a lot. And I think the realistic answer is we are done. However, we still do have 10 embryos frozen. How that works is basically the fertility clinic will keep them frozen for you for a fee every year that you pay. So that is something that I have struggled with a lot, because while I'm not 100% wanting to give it up, I also know it's not realistic for us to have another kid financially and just like emotionally. I just love that we got to have a boy and a girl and we can give our attention to these two. And also being pregnant was hell. I like don't want to have to go through that again. Wouldn't wish it on Alex. So it's just hard. Just knowing that we have these like Riley and Tanner are just the coolest, amazing little kids. And knowing that we have 10 potential more just, you know, in the freezer, it just feels really hard to give that up. So, you know, we've just been paying the fee every year now. And it's just like, when am I going to feel ready to give that up? I'm not really sure. And it's something that we've talked about a lot. So for now, they're just sitting on ice and we'll keep them there for now.
You said the pregnancy was rough. It was like a textbook pregnancy though, until the very end, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, this was my first pregnancy, so I don't have anything to compare it to.
I will tell you, twin pregnancies are way worse than single pregnancies.
That's good to know, because I hear so many people were like, oh my gosh, pregnancy is the most amazing thing. It's just so magical. And I'm like, what? No, it was awful. I did not enjoy it at all. Obviously, you know, when you feel the babies kick and move around, that's super cool. But I was just immediately, as soon as I was pregnant, was so sick for a while, so exhausted, just tired like I've never experienced until the babies were actually born. But it was really, really rough. And thankfully, I was not working full time at that point. So I was able to get a lot of sleep in for those 8 months I was pregnant. It was really, I want to say around 32, 33 weeks, somewhere around there when things started to change a little bit for me. Up until then, there was, you know, I had no issues whatsoever. Glucose tests, totally fine. I was gaining like an appropriate amount of weight. The babies were looking amazing. I had totally fine blood pressure. Then my appointment around 32 or 33 weeks, I went in and they were like, oh, your blood pressure is high. Are you doing okay? And I was like, I mean, I've noticed it's been a little high lately. And I've been at that point in a twin pregnancy, like, I guess like you're already beyond full term for a singleton pregnancy. So you're exhausted. You're ready to have these babies out. You're not doing a whole lot at that point. I didn't feel that crazy. I just, you know, my blood pressure, I could feel my heart going. So they had me do the urine collection test. I forget what it's called exactly, where you basically pee in everything into a container for 24 hours. And then they measure the protein in your urine. And that's an indication of preeclampsia. So I did that once and it came back kind of borderline, like it was elevated, but not high enough to be classified as preeclampsia. So they had me repeat it the next week and I got the call at like 8 a.m. when I was about a little over 34 weeks at that point then, that I hadn't even gotten out of bed for the morning yet. This was at like 8 a.m. or something. And the nurse told me that I definitely had preeclampsia and I was to be on bed rest. So I called my wife and I was like, okay, well, I'm already on bed rest now. I haven't even gotten out of bed for the day. They switched me over to twice a week appointments at that point. So this was a Monday when I got that call to be on bed rest. So I went in Thursday for my next appointment And we brought our hospital bag with us because at that point, you just never know what the doctor is going to tell you when you're that far along, especially in a twin pregnancy. So we were ready to go. We went into the doctor. They checked my blood pressure, and I had been monitoring it at home throughout the week because they wanted me to keep an eye on it. And if it was above a certain amount, they wanted me to go right to the hospital. It was a little borderline, but you know, I'm like, okay, I have this appointment Thursday. Let's just wait and see. I went in, they took my blood pressure. I didn't even see the doctor before the nurse came in and said, the doctor's on the phone with Ellen D, which at that point I was like, Ellen D, he's calling Ellen DeGeneres. I was so out of it. I was very confused. So the doctor's on the phone with Ellen D. You guys are going to the hospital right now. You're probably gonna have the babies tonight. What? At that point, I guess I was like almost 34 and a half. So I started freaking out. I'm like not mentally prepared for this. So we go over to the hospital and they hook me up to the monitors to check the baby's heart rates and all of that. And I'm just like on the verge of like a panic attack. I'm like puking on the table. It was awful. So they end up admitting me for preeclampsia to just be monitored. About 24 hours or so, my blood pressure had kind of stabilized, so they weren't in this like immediate need to take the babies out, which was great because we wanted them to last at least another week or so if we could. I had already had a C-section scheduled, so I knew that was going to be coming up. But
and the C-section was scheduled because?
The babies, by 32 weeks, they were still not in a consistent position. They were kind of flipping back and forth every appointment. I think at the 32-week appointment, they were both transverse. It was just like constantly moving. And the doctor just didn't feel comfortable letting me try a vaginal delivery, even though I was like, I had my heart set on that. I really wanted it, but I just listened to her. And if she thought it would be best and safest to just do a C-section, then I just kind of said, okay, great. Let's just get it scheduled and do it. So I knew that that was already a possibility, that that was going to definitely be happening. But then we are in the hospital. After 24 hours, the doctor comes back and says, hey, like, you've kind of stabilized now, which is great, but the chance of your blood pressure going crazy again with preeclampsia is extremely high. So you have two options. You can either go home tonight and most likely have to come back tomorrow when your blood pressure goes crazy again, or you can just stay in the hospital for the next potential couple weeks until your C-section. And we were like we're going to be living in the hospital for like 2 weeks now. This is just so
tell me the month, because this is during the pandemic as well.
Yeah. So this was in February
of 2021.
Of 2021. Yeah. So it was definitely fairly strict rules at the hospital. Alex was allowed there, and then we were allowed one other guest. And it had to be the same person for the duration of my stay. It's not like you could say one person this day, one person the next day. So one of my best friends lived super close to the hospital, so she was able to come, which was really nice. But yeah, no one else was allowed whatsoever. So we got permission certain days when I was doing better to, in a wheelchair, Alex would take me down to the lobby and we'd go right outside the lobby in the parking lot. And some of our friends would come and they brought us like donuts and stuff. So it was nice that we still got to see some people. But so it ended up, we got to the hospital on Thursday. By Monday then of that following week, I started to feel what I thought was like my water leaking a little. Like I felt a little weird. I let the nurses know, and it wasn't a lot, but it was like enough for me to be like, okay, that doesn't seem normal. So they tested me to see if my water had broke, and they said it didn't. Then I had a ultrasound, and it showed that Riley, baby A, her fluid level had decreased. Clearly something was going on. So then they did another ultrasound the next morning. And they were like, whoa, it has really decreased now. And we're concerned. The high-risk doctor came in and took a look and said, yeah, I'm recommending that you have a C-section this afternoon. So I said, okay, this is happening. It's today. So that was after five days in the hospital or so, 6 days. That might've been the sixth day. We kind of prepared ourselves. They let me shower really quick. Then I had to get back in bed to be like constantly monitored to make sure that the babies were okay. And then pretty soon after that, they noticed that Riley's heart rate was going very high. So they said, okay, this is starting to actually get serious now. We need to get you in the OR sooner rather than later. So got me in, and yeah, that within a few hours of them telling me this was going to happen, they were born.
How do you feel about the C-section? Because I know you said that you wanted to have a vaginal delivery.
Clearly it wasn't ideal, but at the end of the day, you just kind of have to make your peace with it. This is what is going to be safest and best for both you and your babies to enter this world. So it really honestly was not as bad as I thought at all. I'd heard horror stories from people. I was expecting an insane recovery, and just especially with twins, I was very concerned because you're not supposed to lift a whole lot and you're not supposed to do a whole lot. I'm like, okay, well, we've got two infants now. What am I supposed to do? The procedure itself was great. I did get super nauseous and threw up on the operating table while they were stitching me back up. So that was fun. But then I don't want to say thankfully, but both of the babies ended up needing to go to the NICU. So I had most of that day to at least sleep and recover, because I wasn't even able to go down there until probably 8:30 that night. I got to see them for a few minutes in the room before they took them, but then you're not able to get out of the bed after a C-section until you can feel your legs and walk, which takes obviously a while. So that was really hard. Alex went down to the NICU to see them several hours before I was able to go. And she just said it was like, she came back to our room in tears and said it was just terrible, because you know, you're still like dealing with the shock of, oh my gosh, my children were born today. I wasn't expecting that. And then you see their teeny tiny little 5-pound bodies just covered in wires and have IVs coming out of their hands. They're on oxygen. Like it was just like kind of horrifying to see, because you're just not prepared for that. And you just want to make sure they're okay. And especially her having to go by herself, I know that was really hard.
What has been the most surprising thing about having twins or being a mom? Both, I guess. It's kind of hard to differentiate.
Right. Yeah. Because having twins as a first time mom is wild. Like I was not prepared for how hard it was. I will tell you that at all. The craziest thing is just probably how much you love them, and like just seeing the two of them interact together now, especially they're 15 months old, like they're both walking. They have so much fun together. And like the best thing in the world is just seeing them play hide and go seek with each other and just hysterically laughing. It's just, oh my gosh, it's incredible. It's just the most amazing thing. And it just makes everything else all worth it. Having to go through that insane newborn phase with two at the same time for this, like, oh, it's so worth it.
What is your best advice for twin parents?
I would say that this is advice that I don't necessarily take myself and working on it, but the best advice would probably be to just go easy on yourself. It is so hard. It's so hard. And you just need to realize that certain things at the end of the day don't matter. The kids are not going to remember certain things. They're not going to remember that they cried in their crib for an extra 5 minutes while you were dealing with the other one or anything like that. It doesn't matter if you haven't folded laundry in 4 days, any of that stuff. You're not going to remember it in a few years. So don't stress about it now. You're just surviving in the beginning. That's all you need to worry about.
True. Well, thank you so much for this interview. I enjoyed listening to your story. It's always great to be able to hear different types of stories, because as a twin mom, at least before I was twin mom, I didn't know very many twins, and it was really hard to be able to connect. So it's great to hear other people's stories.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for hanging out with me today. If you want to hang out some more, you can follow me on Instagram at @neighborhoodtwinmom. If you want more info on what we talked about in this episode or a transcription of the audio, head to neighborhoodtwinmom.com. If you like what you hear, please leave a 5-star rating and review. This helps other people be able to find the podcast. Music for this episode was composed by Cameron Norby. Find more of his work on YouTube.